Hey, this is Anthony Ha with the Original Content Podcast. I just wanted to give you all a heads up that Jordan Crooks, Sarah Perez, and I recorded a normal review this week of the new Hulu show Castle Rock, but there were some technical issues with Jordan's recording. So for most of the episode, you're only going to hear me and Sarah, and then Jordan will pop up at the very end. I tried to edit things so none of that's super confusing. Anyway, I hope you enjoy it. Thanks for listening. Hello, and welcome to the Original Content Podcast. I'm Anthony Ha.
And I'm Sarah Perez.
Welcome back to the podcast, Sarah. It's awesome to have you.
Thanks for having me.
So this week, we are going to review Castle Rock, which is a new series on Hulu. And we're also going to do a recap of some of the recent streaming and entertainment news. And I think we were going to start with the most controversial story first, which is about James Gunn, who was the director of Guardians of the Galaxy 1 and 2 and has written Guardians of the Galaxy 3. So he has this Twitter presence where he, I think, basically from 2008 to 2011, tweeted a lot of like pretty, they're definitely like jokes that are in very, very bad taste. Things like molestation and rape and pedophilia. Like, bad taste is like the mild way to put it. And a bunch of conservative commentators basically resurfaced all of those tweets and, you know, basically put a lot of public pressure on Disney to fire Mr. Gunn. And so he was fired from the third Guardians of the Galaxy movie last week. And I think, I mean, there's sort of like a lot of different pieces to the news in terms of, I mean, it sort of follows this line of, you know, certain people getting fired for tweets, but also I think a portion of this, you know, hardcore conservative movement really targeting and going after people. So I think this is something where a lot of people had really conflicting feelings.
I mean, I don't have a huge opinion on the impact to the franchise itself because, full disclosure, I have not watched Guardians of the Galaxy, like, a single movie. I'm not super big into any of the sort of Marvel, superhero, DC movies, but obviously this guy had some very disturbing things to say, whether they were jokes or not, and Disney has a brand, a family brand image to protect. So it kind of makes sense that, you know, when these things were called out, that they would take the action they did.
100% Disney knew about these tweets. I had seen these tweets before, just like following him on Twitter, and, you know, had the reaction of like, oh, that's a stupid tweet, but didn't, you know, think more of it. And that's not to say that if somebody was, you know, more seriously offended by these tweets, I mean, I think that's a completely legitimate response. But I think what isn't debatable is that these were very, very, you know, this was something that was known about him, that basically there was this period where he like wanted to be this sort of edgy comedian on Twitter for a bunch of reasons, realized that was a really stupid thing to do. And then basically after he, I think, had been sort of getting very vocally taking on Trump, and then like this conservative pundit Ben Shapiro on Twitter was like, then these other conservatives decided that they were going to go through his history and dig this stuff up. So in that sense, it seems like this very concerted campaign to get him fired. It also seems deeply hypocritical for Disney to pretend they didn't know about it. But I think it's also fair to say that, as you said, Sarah, Disney has this very specific brand, I mean, particularly for things like Marvel, and so I understand why they are put in a difficult position. I think for a number of reasons they made the wrong decision, but it's definitely not a great situation when the director of one of your biggest franchises, you know, is in the headlines for saying stuff like this.
No, I honestly, like, if you're going to represent a brand that, you know, the movies are basically catered to families with kids and that sort of thing, and you're tweeting about pedophilia, it's just rape, like, that just doesn't line up. Whether Disney knew or not, this was long overdue if that's how he behaved online. And also, you know, just tweeting something, posting to Facebook, whatever it is, there's a line between what you can type out and publish to the internet and what you can, like, joke around about in real life. Like, if you're a stand-up comedian doing a show, you know, you can say, like, crass, offensive things because there's a certain tone and a time and a place where people are accepting that you're pushing the envelope or you're testing out weird, crazy material. But online, that's just not the same kind of vibe that you get. It's like, oh, he really feels these things. He really believes this.
No, I think that's fair. And I think one of the other points that I think definitely goes against, I mean, that it basically is in favor of firing him, is the fact that we're not talking about one tweet taken out of context, but a series of tweets made over several years. One of the things is, I mean, all of these tweets were, you know, I think the most recent ones are like, most of them are from like 2008, 2009, 2010. He wasn't hired by Disney until, I think, 2012, maybe 2011. So this is all stuff that predates his involvement with Disney. This is when he was basically this, you know, director of these like horror comedy, like gross out horror comedies. So it was theoretically more on brand. But they're still like really, really shitty tweets. And I mean, and I think one other thing I would say in his defense is I think that he, you know, even before this current wave, I mean, this is stuff that he's acknowledged and apologized for in the past. And so, again, I think, to me at least, it's not debatable that the people who were pushing most aggressively to have him fired were doing so in really, really bad faith. And I mean, you know, we're talking about people like Mike Cernovich who have tweeted things themselves where he talks about like not thinking like rape is real and you know, like insane offensive stuff too. So there's just like a deep element of hypocrisy. But it's a difficult situation because it's really hard to imagine anyone standing up and defending those tweets, and imagine particularly anyone at Disney being able to defend those.
And maybe there should be a delete your account hiring clause going forward. It's like, would you like to direct our new family franchise? Good, delete your account.
Immediately delete everything.
Like, just wipe it out.
Purged in that moment. So it's a story that Sarah wrote today, which is about Discovery, is reportedly thinking about launching its own streaming service. Sarah, did you want to tell us a little bit more about that?
So I guess the CEO of Discovery is contemplating, he's mulling it over, a standalone direct-to-consumer service priced at maybe $5 to $8 per month. Which seems like a lot. They just merged with Scripps Networks, which has a whole lot of other shows. And now he's talking about how they have like a quarter of the U.S. female audience ages 22 to 25 through their, you know, some of their channels that are very popular with women like HGTV, TLC, Food Network, ID, like any of those really weird reality shows with, you know, multiple kids or interesting family situations or my 6-month fiance or whatever. I could only see this working through Amazon channels because that's your sort of a la carte service for picking and choosing your own, you know, your own channels that you want to watch. So you could have like, you know, CBS for your Star Trek and, you know, HBO Now or for your Game of Thrones, and then maybe this, which would be just a bunch of other cable junk that you might want to watch at some point. I don't think they know at this point what their full strategy would be around this. They don't even know, A, if they're definitely launching this. They're just thinking about it. I guess they're testing the waters by throwing out this remark. B, they could not necessarily launch this like by themselves where you have to go get their own app or whatever. They might launch with a partner like Amazon channels, Prime Video channels. Or they might partner up with one of the current, you know, over-the-top streaming services that allows for add-ons like Hulu or YouTube TV, allows you to, like, buy premium packages that you add on to your subscription. So there are different ways that they could pursue this.
All right, well, let's move on to our review of Castle Rock. So this is an adaptation of Stephen King, although not of any particular story or novel, but rather Castle Rock is a setting of many of Stephen King's works. And so this sort of is kind of loosely inspired by Stephen King with like lots of sort of like Easter eggs and nods towards different stories.
It is full on Easter eggs. Like, I'm not the biggest Stephen King fan. I read some books when I was younger. Of course, I've watched some of the bigger movies like The Shining or Carrie, Pet Sematary, oddly. But, you know, even I was able to pick out some of the Easter eggs and I was like, oh, look, it's this. Oh, look, it's that. I mean, obviously Shawshank, where the story takes place. Yeah, that's like kind of like hit you over the head with it. And then Sissy Spacek being in it is pretty obvious as well. And then the rest of them, you sort of have to be more of a King fan to pick up on them. Oh, and the guy who plays it is, like, the evil character.
It's not clear yet if he's evil.
I'm pretty sure he's evil. Like, he just...
There's something sinister about him, but it's not...
Give the listeners a sort of overview.
Well, so we should also say this is being released the way a lot of Hulu series are, which is an initial batch of episodes which came out on Wednesday. And so there's like a little bit of binging at the beginning, but then after that it's going to be week by week. I think we all watched the first three episodes.
I watched four.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right. And I think since this is an initial review, we'll try to keep this fairly spoiler-free and... you know, we may revisit it and have a more sort of spoiler-filled discussion down the road, but, like, maybe we'll try to keep this one fairly general. Although I think there's a couple plot points in the first episode that we kind of are going to at least hint at. We may ruin a couple of the surprises, but we're going to try to do our best.
I would say spoiler warning just in case, because to discuss this show, I mean, you kind of have to reference some of the, you know, some of the plot. Well, the one thing is, like, when the first episode starts, it sort of just drops you into the action. Like, you don't know who these people are or what's going on, and you spend a lot of the episode one of just sort of, like, figuring out, oh, okay, this guy is this guy. And the show kind of has a slow pace, and even though it's got some weird and creepy stuff going on, I mean, you know, the premise is that Castle Rock is this creepy main town where a lot of strange stuff has gone down over the years, and this is sort of a continuing saga of some other strange stuff that's happening. And it does involve the prison, the Shawshank Prison, which is under new management. And there's no work in the town. It looks like a rundown, you know, small American town where a lot of jobs have left over the years, and the prison is really where you can work. And so main characters include like the new warden, the old warden, briefly, the prison guard. And then the main character is Henry Deaver, who had moved away from the town, has now come back. His mother still lives there, and he has a history in the town where he was a kid and he had gone missing for an extended period of time. 11 days, was it? And there's some suspicious circumstances around that we're starting to learn about. And honestly, we've watched it 3-4 episodes and we don't even know the true story yet. He doesn't remember, and he's kind of trying to figure it out or remember it too. He comes across as like, oh, you immediately find him very relatable and personable and you feel for him, you know. And then, you know, there's one point where somebody presents a story, a version of the events, that paint him in not such a good light, and you begin to question, oh, wow, like, is he actually, did he do something? And we really don't know at this point. And then there is a prisoner who is a very central character who, like I said, may or may not be evil. There's a lot of cool theories about how he might be related to other Stephen King stories, but I guess we can't get into that, so that would be spoilerish. But yeah, this show kind of moves slowly. I will say that in episode one, there is a, what I would call it, jump scare, where I about screamed, threw my phone across the room, just like lost it, because I do not watch horror. And I'm sure this is all very tame for somebody who is well immersed in the horror genre, but I am not. And I didn't even see it really coming, even though it was pretty obvious it should be coming. And it was something happens and you're like, ah, that happened in episode one. And I was like cursing Anthony for making me watch the show because I was like, now I'm not going to sleep.
Well, because I had described it to you as, and this was definitely my experience of it. It was like, this is not a horror show. This is a show that happens to be based on the work of Stephen King, but it seems like much more of like a supernatural mystery show. Right. There are things that are like eerie, like lots of like people going into dark places with flashlights, but like there was nothing that I considered particularly like scary. So I'm really curious, what was the moment that freaked you out?
It's in the first episode. Yeah. It is in the dark place flashlight part. And I was like, that is obviously going to happen, but I'm not used to just being scared like that because I don't watch American Horror Story. I don't watch horror movies. I definitely did not watch it. Like, I watched part of it when I was a kid, the original. Like, that messed me up for years. Like, I had to, like, turn on all the lights and open the shower curtain every time I was in the bathroom. I'm serious. I have a low tolerance for horror. What's that new one? Hereditary.
Hereditary.
Yeah.
Yeah, Sarah, do not watch that. It is really good, and I could not sleep for days.
Okay, this is, I'm probably going to agree this is not on the level of what I've read about that movie, because that is the only way I will view that movie, is through a Wikipedia article. But, I mean, the majority of the show is just sort of like, has this weird, creepy vibe to it, but not even, and then a lot of it is seemingly normal, like, it could be just any weird Twin Peaks-ish or...
There's certain kinds of mystery shows where the mystery is just the vehicle for this bigger story. And there are mystery shows, like Castle Rock feels to me, I mean, there are interesting characters, they are trying to draw out this setting, but like the mystery just feels so much more central. And so this feels like the kind of show where if the explanation of who Bill Skarsgård's character is and the explanation of what happened to Henry Deaver when he was a kid is not interesting, then I'm going to feel, like, annoyed. I'm going to say, well, this was not a great use of my time.
Well, I think I already know what it is. Like, I have a theory. I'm not going to say it here. But, like, do you want to hear my theory? Or is it going to be too much of a spoiler?
No, it's not a spoiler. A theory is not a spoiler.
No, Siri, I didn't say Siri. I said theory. Okay. So, I think that the prior warden... and I don't even know if this is as much as theory as just what everybody believes, but like, had some sort of vision from God, and he got together with the preacher who had a similar vision, and they both were told by God that the devil was in Castle Rock, and this is why all the weird stuff happens in the town, and they captured him, locked him up, and that is that... you know, Skarsgård's character, the prisoner that they discovered in the prison. Unnamed, yeah. And that is why, you know, he has these seemingly weird powers to, like, when he touches people, terrible things happen. You know, they die, they go on shooting sprees, whatever. So the devil has now been, quote, let out of his cage, and... you know, bad things are going to start happening in the town again, and we're going to see that. And don't necessarily know what was going on with the disappearance, but I think it has something to do with how they captured the devil guy, demon, or whatever he is in the first place. Somehow they used the boy. And, I don't know what the deal is with the boy and his father's death, and I don't know how they captured the guy or what that new character... I don't know if this was in episode 3 or 4, but he went out into the woods and met that guy who lives in that old house. Is that episode 4? Have you guys seen that?
I think that's episode 4.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so, I mean, there's other characters who are related to this mystery, and the girl who has the psychic abilities, and I don't know how all that... But I think the central theme there is... okay, you've let the devil or a demon out of his cage. Now, here comes terrible stuff.
I think the warden believed that he was the devil, but I don't know if he actually is the devil.
And aren't they going to conclude the whole storyline at the end of the season? Like, each season of the show is going to be a different story? Is that right? I thought I had read that somewhere, that it's going to be sort of along the lines of, they're going to wrap this up and then there's going to be another story. I mean, maybe they'll still have ties if it's taking place in the same thing. But I definitely, now that I've watched 4 episodes, I feel like I want to see where this is going. And while I do love the characters and the casting, this is not really my kind of show. But I think that there are a lot of Stephen King fans out there, and I think that true Stephen King fans are going to love this. Like, I think they're going to be sitting there watching every scene like, oh my god, did you see that reference to The Green Mile? Oh my god, did you see this character has the same name as the guy in The Shining? You know, and just be like freaking out. And, you know, good for them. But it's also not like, it's still like with Handmaid's Tale and, you know, now this, you know, Hulu has not got that mainstream hit on its hands with a Stephen King story, Castle Rock, that's basically a love letter to Stephen King fans. I don't like this mini dump thing that Hulu's doing. Like, they did the same thing with Castle Rock. In fact, they even dumped like the first 3 episodes. And you can, if you have Apple TV, you can stream them for free without even being a Hulu subscriber. Isn't that right? Isn't that the promotion they were running?
I think it's only the first episode that's available for free.
Oh, it's only one? I thought It was the first 3. Okay. But yeah, then they released the first 3, and then I guess they're going to release the rest on a weekly basis?
Right. Which is what they did with The Handmaid's Tale as well.
Handmaid's Tale. I don't like it. I think that's stupid. We're past that type of watching TV. I mean, I guess it keeps people addicted and coming back to Hulu. And surely they have data that they're acting on to do something like this. But, you know, not everything is Game of Thrones. Not everything is going to have an obsessive group of people like tuning in live every time, you know, the show is released. And especially for something that's so bingeable, like Castle Rock, for example. I watched the first 2 episodes back to back because I just wanted to keep going. And then I watched episode 3 and 4 back to back when I saw episode 4 was on the screener's site. I was like, oh, I'm going to watch that too. It just makes sense. I mean, the whole point of subscribing to an on-demand streaming service is that you're in control of your time, and you, like, this disrespects the consumer's time, because it's like saying, oh, you will watch this when I tell you you can watch it. Whereas, well, like, I just, while we were doing this podcast, I'm mad about this. While I was doing this podcast, I got a push notification on my phone from Netflix, and it said that the next season of Orange is the New Black is now available for streaming on Netflix. And so now it is the main, like, if you go into Netflix, it's the main, like, banner or whatever, and, yes, there it is. All, let me tell you, 13 episodes are now available for your viewing pleasure. And I can watch them whenever I want, you know, for as long as I want. And that is the way I want to consume my TV, because I do not watch television every night. And when I do, I'm going to sit down for a session and watch probably 2, maybe 3 hours of it. So don't tell me that I can only have X amount of content of this show that I'm trying to tune into. I hate it. Dumb. Put your freaking season out there already.
I think that, you know, I mean, certainly there's, I think that you make, like, a good point. I think that's definitely what a lot of people want. But I also think that there's, you know, that, I mean, there's a lot of people who just still watch regular TV, right? And I don't think, like, the fact they have to, like, wait a week for each episode, like, drives them crazy. And I think that in some ways, this model, I actually like it, at least in theory, I like it as this sort of hybrid of, like, taking things that are good about both models, because it says, like, hey, if you want to, like, check out the show, and a lot of times, you know, there are shows that if you watch one episode, you don't necessarily have a great sense of whether it's something you want to keep watching or how good it's going to get. And so putting multiple episodes out there, I think, is in that sense, a good way to start it. I understand what you're saying about, like, then you kind of want to keep going once you've kind of got that momentum behind you. But I think there's also an issue just of, even if when you're getting a show off the ground, of where that I think what one thing that, and even I think Jenji Kohan, one of the creators of Orange is the New Black, has talked about, is there's this cycle, right, of if you're a Netflix show and you come out with a new season, basically, if things go well, everyone talks about it intensely for the weekend, for a week, and then there's still some conversation, but it kind of trails off, partly because you don't know where everyone is, like, you can only talk about it when you've, like, really seen everything, and so there's something nice about, I mean, this is definitely, I think, more advantageous for people who care about things like the online conversation, but there's something nice about, okay, great, like, if you want to keep up, like, there is a week-by-week cadence, and you know where everyone, the, you know, the, all the fans are, that they're caught up to this point. And then if you're not seriously devoted to it, then maybe, it, you know, you can either, which is what I do with a lot of HBO shows, is I probably won't watch it every week. I'll watch it every 2 or 3 weeks. I'll catch up in the last 2 or 3 episodes in one sitting. Or I can wait, you know, until, like, the whole thing's out, and I can just sit down and just binge the whole thing. So I see what you're saying, and I think you guys are right that, in general, that's the direction things are going. I personally don't hate that that Hulu does it this way. I think the ideal would be that different shows, like, different approaches make sense, rather than just... And I think you're starting to see that where I think there are a handful of shows now where... I mean, they're usually not scripted shows, but something like, you know, the David Letterman show on Netflix, where they're actually putting them out more in a sort of more gradual way. And I think that... I think in general things are moving towards this kind of full season binge, and that's fine. But I also like the idea that you can make different decisions about different shows. Of this is the kind of show that it makes sense to sort of like savor it and like, you know, either, you know, maybe, or have plot twists that come back week to week. Or this show really is a 10-hour movie. Let's just put it all out once because everyone's going to want to get through as much of it as they can. And you know, I don't necessarily always... I think there's always something... I think there are benefits to both approaches.
But Castle Rock is not the kind of show that needs a week-to-week...
I agree.
...launch schedule. I think it's just some decent TV. I think, you know, Hulu's super excited about it because it has Stephen King's name attached to it. And they need another win besides... Handmaid's Tale.
So I would say overall, like, I think we're all, it sounds like none of us is crazy about the show. I enjoyed what we watched so far, but I do think it's more centered on the mystery than I really wanted it to be. And, you know, we were talking about Easter eggs, and I'm not necessarily, it's funny because I've read probably more Stephen King books than virtually any other writer. I've read like 7 or 8 Stephen King books. On Writing, I think, is probably the best book on creative writing I've ever read. But compared to a hardcore Stephen King fan, that is not a lot. And so I think I missed a lot of the Easter eggs. And I kind of just feel like a show shouldn't rely on that. And that shouldn't be the main... It's fine if you have them, but that shouldn't be the main draw. So I'm curious about where it goes, but I would say I'm not like crazy about it right now.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's... If you're a diehard Stephen King fan... Like, my dad has read, I think, every single one of his books, maybe except for On Writing. but, I think he'll, like, really love it, probably. I wouldn't know, but I assume that he'll really like it. I don't care at all about it. Maria seemed to really like it, which was shocking because she hates horror, but she, like, kind of got into it. And she was like, you're just going to have to stay by my side for the rest of my life because this is going to scare me, but I want to watch it. I don't really care about it at all, and I probably will not watch another episode unless it's something she wants to watch while we're hanging out. So take that as you will, dearest listeners.
I'm gonna finish the season and see if they wrap up the mystery, but if they try to drag it out into a season 2, I'll probably drop off, honestly. I feel like a lot of the shows that, like, whether it's Castle Rock or Westworld or Game of Thrones, Handmaid's Tale, or even The Expanse, the shows are a little bit of work. Like, you can't just watch them, kind of lean back, watch them and enjoy them, and then just kind of go on. You've got to, like, think about them and what, there's something to figure out. And then you find yourself on Reddit for, like, an hour afterwards reading, like, fan theories. And I was like, why do I watch Westworld on a weeknight? Got to stop doing that. I can only watch that on weekends when I can stay up till 1 in the morning because I will be on Reddit for like hours reading theories, you know, and it's just, it's a,
Yes, I need to read reviews right afterwards. I need to know what other people thought. Like, I immerse myself into it. And then there's other shows that I can just sort of like, they're just sort of lighter. You can just sort of enjoy them for what they are and then go on with your life.
So let's cut it here. We've been chit-chatting. We appreciate you listening. Anthony, go ahead. It's your turn.
Well, thanks to everyone who made it to the end of this episode. If you did enjoy this somewhat wide-ranging conversation, you can subscribe on Apple Podcasts if you have not already, or on any other podcast app that you enjoy. You can also leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. And Sarah, thank you so much for joining us.